Welcome to Neighborhood Church. To find out more about who we are and to support the work that we're doing, go to neighborhood.love. Have a good and beautiful day, friends.
I don't think I'm going to. All right, so I'm going to start with a story because I never tell stories. I was thinking about this. You were telling good stories the last time you were speaking. I don't remember your name. I'm so sorry, Fester. So and I'm like, man, every good speaker, every good pastor, like, weaves those awesome stories into their message. And I don't do that a lot. And on the way here, I was like, oh, man, I didn't do that. So I sent a text to my family, and I'm like, because I'm a storyteller. I'm always telling stories. Whether they're true or not is up for you to decide, but that's not the point of them. So I'm going to tell you guys not more so a story, but I'm going to tell you about a person. Has nothing to do with my message, I think. It really doesn't. I just want to story time is good. So, and maybe every time I'll speak, I'll give you a new story, because this is how I kept kids entertained when I was working with troubled youth. Was I was always telling them some sort of crazy thing that's happened in my life, embellished or not, something that has some sort of truth. So when I was in, I think I was kind of in college, I was doing study abroad in New Zealand. I was living there for 6 months, and I didn't really study. I just traveled. I met some locals, and I just did a lot of traveling, had a lot of crazy stories. But the one that sticks out is a roommate that I had. So when you do study abroad, most normal people plan out when they're going to be living on the other side of the world. I didn't do that. I had a flight to go down there, and I get there, and the cab driver that's bringing us to the college is like, so where are you going? I was like, I don't know. Aren't I going to college? He's like, well, where are you living? I was like, I guess I hadn't really thought of that, where I'm going to be living here for 6 months. He's like, I was like, I just thought maybe I'd walk around. We had like maybe 4 or 5 days before school started. I was like, I thought I would just maybe walk around and find a place to live and find somewhere to rent. He's like, it's not that easy. He's like, well, what I'll do is I'll just drop you off at this hostel, which is where just a lot of traveling kids stay. So in this hostel, I learned that I was not the only one that had this idea. It was full of kids that are all like, hey, we have no idea, or kids, young adults, we have no idea we're going to live for this semester. So we kind of bonded together. So there was me, there was two other Americans, and then two Germans. And, well, there was one guy from India and one German at the time, but the guy from India we couldn't find. We have no idea where he went. He was supposed to join up with us one day, and then long story short, he came up to us like 3 days later, like, we still living together? We're like, oh, sorry, dude. Like, we already found a place. So the two Germans are Broder and Matina. And I want to tell you about Matina, because Matina is something else in this world. So she was, I don't know, at the time I was 20. She was maybe 25. But she was the absolute epitome of just no cares in the world, just free spirit, whatever she wanted. We would be sitting there, and I'm not kidding, like 10, 11 o'clock at night, and all of a sudden we'd hear like a bunch of rustling in her room, and she would come out with a backpack, blankets, sleeping bag, and she's like, all right, guys, well, I'll see you in 2 weeks. We're like, what are you talking about? It's 10 a.m. on, or 10 p.m. on a Tuesday. Like, where are you going? She's like, oh, I just thought I would go down to the beach. Like, beach is like 3 hours away. What do you do? And sure enough, she would leave, and we wouldn't see her for 2 weeks, and she'd come back with all these stories. There was this other time that she showed up at the house. We hadn't seen her in a month at this point. And she showed up with like four guys, and she's like, oh, yeah, these guys are going to stay for a week. Like, what? Where are they going to sleep? Like, what's going on? So she was just like, what is it? She was just super random, but she was the nicest, most loving person ever. Or just the ideas that she had were just kind of out of this world. But the fun part about this is the joke that started coming about with Matina was, like, where is she and what is she doing? Nobody ever knew where she was. Nobody ever knew what she was doing, if she was going to school, if she had a job, if she wasn't, was she traveling, was she not? So as we leave New Zealand, we go on about our life. Broder and I, the other German, we became good friends. To this day, we're good friends. And every 2 years, we go on a trip somewhere in the world, a hiking trip for about 2 weeks. And we most recently went to Montenegro, we've gone to Norway, we've gone to the Swiss Alps, we've gone to Austria, just all these fun places. The point being is, on our journeys, never has anything crazy happened, like, worth telling about. It's just two old guys traveling around. So we go to Germany, this is maybe like 6 years ago, we go to Germany, and I said, hey, let's go to this town called Heidelberg. It's just a really random, it's almost like Duluth. It's like a college town, but an outdoorsy town. And we, and so him and I are walking down the street from our hotel. We're going to the downtown area, and I go, hey, I want to walk. I want to get a feeling of the neighborhoods. I want to walk through the neighborhoods, completely random, way out of the way, way off the beaten path. And this is 10 years after New Zealand. And we're walking down the road, and him and I start having an argument. And he's like, no, it's this way. This way is the fastest. He's like, I know. This is my country. I'm like, bro, I don't care if you know your country or not. You're going the wrong way. Like, and so we separate, and he goes one way, and I go the other way. And I'm walking down the road, and all of a sudden I hear him shouting. And it's unnerving when you're in another country that you don't know how to speak German, or you don't know the language, you don't know what's going on. And your friend comes running and like shouting and yelling, because it's like, okay, is something happening? Are we being attacked? Are like, what is happening? And he's yelling. He's like, Mike. And so like, I'm in fight or flight mode. I'm like, what is happening? What could possibly be wrong? And he's like pointing like down the road, and he's like, and then he starts signaling for me to come over. I'm like, oh my gosh. I'm like, so I run over to him like he needs help. And he's like, look. And like down the street, on this completely random street, 10 years after New Zealand, who's hanging out the window? Matina. She's just sitting there talking on the phone, and we're just like, out of all people in the world that we would randomly run into, like, what do you do? We had no idea where you were even living. And there she was, just happy as ever, and bought us pizza, brought me to the airport. But I was thinking about Matina. Maybe that does factor into my message today, because we're going to be talking about love. I'll say it like this: choosing love and choosing unification over division, choosing love over hatred, choosing unification over division. And we're talking about that today. It's just been something that's been on my heart. It's been a big part of my life lately. But I think for me, and probably for a lot of you, this isn't the easiest of times that we're living in. There is a lot of division. There is a lot of fear. There is a lot of discourse. And I think you can get to a point where it's like, well, what do we do? Is there any hope? So before I jump into that, I told you a story about myself, but I'll tell you a little bit of where I come from and what I'm doing here today. So I don't even think I introduced myself. I'm Mike Valdez. I'm a member here at Neighborhood, and I've been here since I believe the beginning, since we started. Maybe not for like the first 6 months. I was seeing if I wanted to follow Chris over here or not. But Chris and I have known each other for 20 years. So I am part of the speaking team here. I do it probably a couple times a year. Chris and I have known each other for 20 years. We've been in the same church doing ministry together for that entire time. I've had most of the same experiences as he's talked about in here, so I don't have to repeat all of those. And we've just kind of landed in the same space. So we think our theology and the way we think is very similar. So I guess he trusts me enough to come and speak here. I've been in Duluth for 20 years. I lived in Minneapolis. For those of you that don't know this or don't know me, I lived in Minneapolis until college, moved up here for college, for the outdoors, and have just never left. I've made this my home, probably will never leave. I've traveled the world, and I will say that Duluth is still probably, I'll say it is the best place to live in terms of everything. Yeah, Duluth is fantastic. So I've made this my home, and I love it, and I love this community, and that's why I'm here. My background and what I bring into today is human behavior, behavioral health. I have extensive experience in child psychology, young adult psychology. I have an education in psychology, and my 15 years of experience working with people with either just behavioral issues or psychological disabilities or disorders. I've worked in a children's home out of college doing diagnostic work, diagnosing children and helping them, giving them a plan moving forward. I have worked in a corporate foster care, which is basically being the dad to four troubled teenagers that have some sort of disorder and helping them find a place in the world. From there, I've moved on to do child protection social work. That was the bulk of my career is working with Native American families to reunify children with their parents. And then most recently, I'm working in adult services, helping adults with disabilities live the best life they possibly can. So that is what I bring into today. As far as my expertise, I guess, and qualifications. Also, what I bring into today is a person that is and has been since, I would say, COVID time, pretty, we'll just say, like, troubled, just feeling really, really down. And I think it's, I lived a life as I was growing up of that kind. I don't know if any of you are in this, but that sheltered church life where everything is great. The problems are out there. The problems are not in here within the church, within my family. The problems are elsewhere. Everybody else is the problem. And I just lived a life that had a lot of privilege, to be honest. I didn't really have a lot of hard things besides personal stuff. So when COVID hits, it is a time for me where and COVID and George Floyd being murdered are happening around the same time, as well as my division from my previous church that I'm at. So I'm having a lot of spiritual trauma, a lot of racial trauma, and a lot of like political trauma and troubles that are going on in the world. And this is a hard time because you're starting to see, for somebody that's single, that has never been married, that has lived alone for the last 20 years, that can be pretty isolating when you're walking into a time where you start to see the people that are closest to you, the relationships that you've built, start to fizzle and start to fall away. There's people that, hey, here's people that I thought I could rely on are all of a sudden, nope, you can't rely on me, or are throwing me out saying, nope, you're not part of my life because you believe this way. Or the opposite, people that I don't want in my life because, oh, you really think that about me and you really think that about my choices. So during this time becomes a pretty dark time in my life of a lot of depression and feeling really down. Except it also becomes a really freeing and liberating time at the same time. There's the really highs and the really lows. And the liberating part being I'm learning who I am. I'm learning who I can depend on without fear. I'm learning who's going to have my back no matter what. I'm learning how people truly feel about me. So there's liberation in that. There's liberation in me letting go of some of that icky stuff in my life. There's liberation of being, no, here's what I truly believe in, and here's what I'm willing to like have a cause for. So that has continued, you know, ups and downs until this year. This year has not been super great. Maybe the last 6-8 months for us. Maybe it is for you, but for me, it hasn't been. Specifically having the last name Valdez and talking about the political things that are happening and worrying about my safety just going to the grocery store. And so over the winter, it's been a really isolating, down, dark time for me. So I get into this mode of, okay, the world sucks. People suck. I'm worried about this. And I'm finding myself doing a lot of talking negative, and those people are the problem. They're bad. And it's bringing me more and more down. I'm like, how do I get out of this? So I start trying to eat healthy. I start working out. Those things are great. Saunaing all the time. It's like, okay, these things are helping a little bit, but I'm still like facing that deep, dark Minnesota depression. And I just feel this nudge from God. But like, hey, Mike, remember that thing called love? Have you ever thought about trying that? And if you guys know me, I'm a pretty loving person in general. Like I'm happy. I'm go lucky. But in my alone time, it's like, oh, well, the world is a problem. And it's kind of that. And so like more so in my thoughts, I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. I'll give that a shot. And so this is where this idea comes from today of choosing love over hate, choosing love over choosing unification over division. So before I get into it a little bit more, let's start by talking about what I mean by hate and what I mean by division. And the only reason I bring this up is I said this to my friend the other day. I was talking about hate and they're like, well, what do you mean you don't hate anybody? I hate a lot of people. And I'm like, maybe we don't have the same definition. So when I think of hate, or I guess for a second, what do you think of when you think of like hate? Just to yourself, like what pops into your head when you say I hate this, or when you hear the word hate? Also, how do you use that word? How often do you use that word? When you use that word, what are you using it for? I tend to find that people use hate a lot more lightly than I do. When I think of hate, I'm thinking of like an active decision that I want something bad to happen, or I really don't like that, or there's something sowing that my intention when I say the word hate is division and like I don't like you. I would be better off if you weren't around. Not like wishing death upon, I guess in some cases wishing hurt or harm, but that's what I think of when I think of the word hate, is like at its worst, wishing harm, but at the best, wishing something bad for that other person, or wishing their non-existence or something like that. So I take hate pretty seriously. So when I think of that, I want to give you an example that draws a distinction. So let's distinction between like hate and dislike. Okay. So and we're going to use this probably for the message, this example. So let's take a family member let's do a coworker. Actually, you can decide in your head whether it's a family member, a coworker, a friend, or whatever. And we're having a conversation with this person, okay? And this person says something truly offensive or frustrating to you. They say something degrading towards you, or in my case, maybe towards my culture, or towards somebody else's culture, or to somebody else's identity. And or maybe it's a political figure that you see making hateful comments, and you just your instant reaction is anger and frustration, and like, I can't believe you just said that. And your brain starts to go to all these places. Okay, so let's pause there and think about your initial reaction. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about our initial reaction, which is our elicited emotion towards another person. That is valid. Any emotion that you have, your reactive emotion towards anybody is always valid, because that is involuntary. You cannot help the way that you initially feel about when somebody says something to you. That emotion, that feeling comes from your beliefs, from your values, from your trauma, from your history. You cannot do anything about that, whether you feel happy, sad, angry, frustrated about something somebody says. However, what you do have control over is what you do next, the step right after that emotion. Do I continue to hold on to that emotion? Do I act upon that emotion? Do I say something to that emotion? So let's take the coworker that calls or says something derogatory. Let's use me for an example. Let's say we're talking about ICE or something, and I have a coworker that says, yeah, something derogatory towards your people, Mike, and they're not even thinking. And I'm like, hold up. And I have anger. I can respond in a couple ways. I can respond in, you know what? You don't have it right. You have no idea what you're talking about. You and fill in the blank. That reaction, I can respond with the reaction of, my intention is to continue the anger, the hate, and the frustration that they put onto me, to get into a fight with them, for lack of better terms. I can choose to start to fight back and forth with them. And the intention of that is to show them that they are wrong, that they are an idiot, and that I am right. That's the intention. It is an intention and a tone of division. I'm going to say, you are in this, you are over here, I'm over here, and it's my side versus your side, and I'm going to show you why you're wrong. I can respond like that. I can also, so that's in the moment. I can also respond like that out of the moment when I go home and I'm talking with my friends or my family. I can respond with, that idiot today. Man, they're so dumb. They don't know anything. How insensitive. Man, they hate. They are the problem with the world. I can do that as well. I'm also, in that instance, sowing division. I'm creating division. I'm creating hatred. I am perpetuating that. The other way that I can respond is, I can do nothing. I can say nothing, and I can just hold resentment towards that person. So I'm not doing an action, but I am doing an action up here. I'm having an action of hatred, of frustration, of perpetuating that within my own brain. So I can do that outwardly in the moment. I can do that outwardly with my words after the moment. And then I can also do that within my own brain in the moment and after the moment. All four of those things are all perpetuating hate, are all perpetuating division, and are all perpetuating that cycle of, I guess just those words, of negativity, we'll say that. So the difference here is it's like, okay, Mike, so what am I supposed to do? Just be like, oh, that's okay. That, oh, man, I love you. Are you saying, Mike, that to respond in love is just to say, oh, you know what? Silly Johnny. Yeah, you're always making racist, sexist remarks. But you know what? God bless you. You're amazing. I am not saying that. I'm saying there is a way to meet in the middle. So holding our boundaries, we can do that. We can respond in love by also holding people accountable. And what does that look like? So you're having the same conversation with a person and they say something super offensive. We can respond in that moment. We can feel that anger. We can feel that, and which is, again, it's totally fine. That is totally valid. We can have those emotions. Now what do I do with that emotion? I'm going to respond in love, but I'm also going to hold this person accountable. Hey, Johnny, love you, but that is super insensitive. I really do not appreciate that. I don't appreciate the way that you're talking about that. Maybe that's the way that you feel, but I do not want to engage in that kind of talk. And could you please not use that around me? And here's why. The difference in that response versus my first response, picking a fight, is my tone, first of all, and my intentionality. My intentionality going into that was to just correct something that somebody said, or more so to set my own personal boundaries and just to say, here's what I feel. Here's what I really feel is right. But my intention was not to fight with that person. My intention was to bring unification rather than division. So this is really important. The way we respond to the world is our intention and our tone. And that's important because that person could go on wanting to argue and fight. And sure, sometimes there is an opening for a discussion. Yeah, I'm willing to have an open discussion with you about this, but I will not turn this into a fight. Sure, here's why I feel that way. And here's why I feel what you're saying isn't fair. But I am not going to start making personal digs. I'm not going to start trying to tell that person why they're wrong. I'm just going to speak from my own experience. Now, if that person wants to, or you feel within yourself, that situation starting to boil over where you can't control that, and now you're frustrated and you want to fight, very appropriate time to just be like, okay, I need to disengage from this. So what we did within that situation is we validated and allowed ourselves to have an emotional response, which is completely valid, and we allowed ourselves to stand up for something that we believe in, but we also still responded in love and allowed ourselves to love and create unification within that. And that it would go to say the exact same thing with our thought process when we go home. The difference when we, like, let's say if we don't respond in the moment, but we go home and we're talking to a friend or a family member, and our response can be, instead of, hey, that idiot, they were doing this or they were doing that, we can say, hey, today I had a really hard conversation with somebody and it really made me sad. Like, it really frustrated me. And here is why. But you know what? What I didn't say is that person was the problem. I was talking about what that person said was the problem. Because when we start to do that, when we start to vilify, when we start to point at other people as the problem, or even other political parties or other even leaders or other countries or other groups, when we are start to pointing to say they are the problem with the world, everything they're doing is wrong, what we're doing is, again, we are continuing, we are perpetuating that cycle of hate and of frustration. What we can say is those actions or those ideals are wrong. But when we're talking about spiritual, in the spiritual sense, I like to think of Jesus and everything that he stood for as he gave his message during this time, like during times of division. I didn't see Jesus going around bashing other people. I saw Jesus going around and loving every individual person, but also calling out and condemning the thing that they were doing. The difference being condemning the action rather than the person. And I sometimes cringe at that because I get really close to love the sinner, hate the sin. I that is like trauma for me. But in a sense, there is truth to that, to where we can be loving, but also hold people accountable for their actions. And so that's something that I think of in the midst of choosing that. So what I would like to do is, as we start to move towards the end here, is start to think about love. Like, how do we do that? What are we willing to do? What does this look like within ourselves? So some things that I think of and some tools here are, what are we willing within ourselves to let go of, right? So I think of when I'm starting to be frustrated against, and again, for me, it's a lot of stuff. When I'm starting to think of people that, like, okay, we'll use the example for me, like racism. Racism's obviously super tough for me. It's swayed my entire life living in northern Minnesota. Not a lot of people look like me. I mean, look around. There's like nobody that looks like me in terms of skin color. It's been a really tough thing for me. So when I think of that, I think of what am I willing to let go of within that for myself? It is, Mike, what am I willing to let go of when people are making remarks? I'm willing to let go of trying to always be right. I'm willing to let go of the hate and the fear that I have. And I'm willing to say, okay, I'm willing to step into to loving and to understanding where people are at. This is a big one for me. I think of, I'll use a good example. It's kind of, I wasn't planning on this, but this just popped into my head. Just to show you guys that I'm actually doing this work and not just saying it, is I think of when Renee Good was murdered. I think, to be honest, for me, there was a level of the first reaction is a lot of frustration and anger. Like, this is just so wrong, right? And then because of who I am as a person, my second reaction is like, why does the world care now when somebody that looks like them, but why didn't they care when somebody that looks like me is killed all the time, right? Now, that's just an initial thought. Like, I don't actually think that now. I want to be clear on that, because that takes away from a person that was unjustly murdered. That's not what I'm getting at, but I'm getting at the trauma that I have from that. That's the elicited trauma, and what do I do with that initial thought? But I'm willing to let go of that. I'm willing to let go of the idea that the world doesn't care about me, and I'm willing to step in love and to be there with others and say, no, like, this is a tragedy. You do not turn this into a situation to make yourself feel better or make yourself feel like the victim. Like, that's what I'm willing to let go of in times like this. I'm not going to sow more division towards people that don't look like me, saying like, oh, you only care, when I'm saying, no, that's wrong. That's not okay. That's not what I'm going to do. How do I know that? Because I do have people that I know that are people of color that did choose that path, right? This is just one example. I'm not saying this is like, I don't even want to make a big deal of that situation in general, because people are valid in their feelings. But I'm telling you what I choose and what I'm willing to set aside in a moment like that. So that's what I'm willing to set aside. But what am I also willing to do? And I kind of made a list here. This is not kind of made a list. I did make a list. So where am I choosing repair over division? And where am I willing to see the best in others? Where am I willing to give people the benefit of the doubt? Where am I willing to follow Jesus' example of loving, but also holding others accountable? Where am I willing to invite other people into love rather than into gossip, into division, into hatred? And this is a daily choice, I think. No, I don't think. This is a daily choice that we have to do this. This is a daily choice where we have to hold ourselves accountable. We have to analyze our own intentions, our own frustrations, our own anger, and what we do with those. And it's hard work, folks. It's really hard work. I'm not actually that good at this. This is just something I'm doing right now that I'm sharing with you. I might actually do this worse than any of you sitting in here. You will find me talking poorly about other people. You will see me pointing my finger and being like, those people are the problem. And then I go home and I'm like, oh my gosh, what did I do that? And in my own prayer or in my own conversations with people, I'm like, I hold myself accountable. Man, Mike, you got to stop doing that. Here's where I'm going to get better. I've called people up being like, hey, actually, I've done this a lot lately. I've getting some weird responses from people like, Mike, why are you doing this? But I've done a lot of like texting people being like, hey, what I said today wasn't appropriate. I'm really sorry. Like, what are you talking about, Mike? I'm like, oh, That when I was saying that I didn't like those people, they're like, dude, everybody talks like that. But I'm like, yeah, but I don't want to talk like that. I don't want to be that kind of person. So it's hard work, and it's to hold ourselves accountable and to choose love every day, because it's not common. it's not something that you see a lot of. But I think as a community here of people that are following Jesus, that we are all here trying to do that together. And that's not the point of church, right? That's not the point of neighborhood. Well, maybe that's the point of some church. Maybe that's the point of a lot of churches, is to be perfect, not neighborhood. Here at Neighborhood, we are here to come together and say, hey, we're all not perfect. We all do this wrong on a regular basis. But hey, how can we be a community of people that have love, care, acceptance for each other, and patience with each other? And what's it when you stand behind somebody when you're I can't think of, it's the most basic word, when support. Oh my gosh. When we can support each other and say, hey, you know, you're screwing up, but so am I. And God bless us. We are really trying to choose this every day. We are really trying to choose love. We are really trying to choose unification over division. We are trying to choose love over hatred. Because if we're not doing that, if we are choosing to talk behind people's back, if we are choosing to gossip, if we are choosing to point at that political party or that person or that ideal that they're the problem, if we're choosing that division, we're only doing exactly what they're doing, what we don't want. I think of this specifically for me when I left a church that I was like, well, you're othering me. You're othering other people with their identity, with the way that they identify, and with their, whether it be sexual identity or gender identity or racial identity, you're othering those people, saying they're not good enough. And I'm being like, see, you people are the problem. You people are the problem. What am I doing? I'm othering them. And so it's like, how do I stop that? Because I'm becoming a part of the problem that I really don't love. So, I could keep rambling on about this, but it's just, I want to leave you with that, is where are we willing to daily make that choice of, you know, I'm going to choose love. I'm going to set my boundaries, but I'm not going to perpetuate it. I'm not going to say those people are the problem, because then the enemy wins. Because the enemy wins, however you see it, whether it's the devil or sin or just evil. Evil wins when we create division between each other and not when we unite. And evil wins when we choose that hatred, when we choose that discourse over love. So where are you willing to make those adjustments? Where are you willing to hold yourself accountable? Where are you willing to stop yourself? Or what conversations are you willing to have with some folks today, being like, hey, you know what? I'm really sorry that I've been coming at you lately. Like, I love you as a person. Here's a better one. Who are you willing right now to look at and be like, yeah, they're not the devil. They're not the problem. They're not evil. I can think of one political figure in my life right now that I'm really trying to do that with, because even if I do that, I'm putting all the problem on one person and on one thing. And that just only hurts me more in the end. So actually, I will do something. I will add in something that I wasn't planning on. But as I'm talking here, I am thinking of a quote from a movie that I really, really like, from Black Panther. I'm sure a lot of you know it and probably know what I'm talking about. But I love this. And this is a really good way to end and kind of set us off on our journey of enjoying a nice week and a nice day. And the context doesn't matter, but it says this: we will work to be an example of how we, as brothers and sisters on this earth, should treat each other. Now, more than ever, the illusions of division threaten our very existence. We all know the truth. More connects us than divides us. But in times of crisis, the wise build bridges, while the foolish build barriers. We must find a way to look after one another as if we were one single tribe. And I just love that. I love that is our challenge going on. So I will pray